Well, in the studio with me now is Conrad and Linda Bishop, who spend a lot of time in their van traveling around the country, bringing their theater performances to theaters, festivals, colleges, community groups, and social agencies. Today, they're going to do some performing for us live in the studios. In 1974, Conrad and Linda founded The Independent Eye, a theater group that has since expanded to include three more members. The independent in that title is in part a reference on their ability to remain independent through their approach to theater. They had earlier been founding members of Milwaukee's Theater X. In 1977, Linda and Conrad moved from Chicago to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where they continue to live. Their theater pieces range from easily accessible humor to more experimental work. Desi, their piece about child abuse, has received a citation from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting when it was broadcast on WJTV in Madison, Wisconsin. Excerpts have also been broadcast on All Things Considered. Linda has described their work as allowing them, with their audience, to be able to celebrate all being together in the same leaky boat. The next voices you will hear are those of Linda and Conrad Bishop.
Dreamers.
Want. Wish. Wish for. Crave. Need. Desire. Require.
Prefer. Have an eye to. Have a mind to. Set the heart on. Covet. Hanker for. Long for. Pine for. Hope for.
Sigh for. Lust after. Yearn for. Hunger for. Want. I want just the basics, food, shelter, love. I want just one kind word.
I want a baseball glove.
I want something to stop the pain.
I want a little appreciation.
I want an ice cream cone.
I want the car Friday night.
I want your solemn word.
I want everything I can get.
I want to get out of this town.
I want to learn French.
I want a bicycle with gears.
I want recognition.
I want to try biofeedback.
I want a real relationship.
I want to be alone.
I want to go to California.
I want to be a movie star.
I make a lot of money.
I want to get well.
I want peace.
I want a total reordering of society.
I want to forget all about it.
I want out.
I want in.
I want food for my baby.
I want a decent job.
You know, I want her to die.
I want to get even.
I want to have a lot of friends.
I want to show them what schmucks they are.
I want a Barbie doll.
I want to join the Cub Scouts.
I want a letter from home.
I want to be an architect.
I want to see my grandchildren.
I want to find out what it's like.
I want the basic things.
I want a Coke and combat boots, and I'm going to go fishing and have a good time, and I want to see the world and meet all kinds of people, and I want to have a good marriage and two wonderful kids, and I want a divorce, and I want some peace and quiet and some teeth that fit, and I want a glass of water and a Spider-Man action race car set.
I want a dolly that wits and talks about it. And you can curl her hair and get her different dresses. And you can even buy her a boyfriend. And I want to have a lot of different dresses and all that. And I want to stop hearing about one toy after another. And I want to stop picking up after everybody. I want some household help. And I want to get my bowels in order and stop worrying. Could it be a tumor? And I want to go to school and draw pictures. And I want a picture of everything so I know how everything looks.
I want to play with the typewriter.
No, you'd break it.
I want to control my own life.
You have responsibilities.
I want to write. A novel.
You don't have the time.
Well, I want to find the time.
You don't have the talent. I want to be totally weird.
You have responsibilities.
I want a candy bar.
You already had a candy bar.
I want to feel an elephant.
You might get stepped on.
I'd like some oriental food.
Well, there's a McDonald's. I want to have my ashes scattered.
No, it's against the law.
I want to try what I read about.
No, it's against the law.
I want to leave my parents.
No, it's against the law.
I want to say what I feel.
No, it's against
I
the
want
law.
To break the law.
No.
I want to have another baby.
I feel the same way. It's just going to be necessary, honey. You know, you find a good time when we can sit down and talk and figure what budget we have and when might be the best time, and then we can plan when we might have another baby without having all the problems that might come along, which I think we can avoid if we just find a good time when we can sit down and talk.
I want to play in the mud.
Oh, it's fine to play in the mud as long as you remember what you have to do, that you have to be careful and remember that Mama works hard to keep you looking your very best. Mama would be upset if she found you playing in the mud and you hadn't remembered and forgot that it's okay to play in the mud as long as you keep clean.
I want to get something nice for my wife, but she'd rather I save the money. I want to do something really big, but I have to consider my family. I want to stop smoking, but I know I won't.
I want to see my grandchildren, but I like my privacy. I want to pray, but I'd be laughed at. I want to stay young, but I'd better act my age.
I want to hit that SOB, but he'd hit me back. I want to scream, but people would turn around.
I want to scream, but people would turn around. I want to pray, but I'd be laughed at.
I want to do all kinds of things, but I'm too young.
I want to do all kinds of things, but it's too late.
I want to raise white rats, but I have to consider my family.
I want it, but I don't need it.
I want it, but not as much.
That's all I want.
I'm satisfied.
I'm really
that's
full.
Enough.
I don't want another thing.
The horn of bloody.
Oh, everything I could
my
ever
heart's
want.
Content.
What else could I want?
I'm content.
Well provided.
Cup brought it over.
I've had enough.
I've had more than enough.
I've had it.
Linda and Conrad Bishop, who are in the studio with me now on Fresh Air. Tell us about how you got together and formed The Independent Eye. Of course, you'd known each other before that, but what lay behind the organizing of The Independent Eye?
Oh, Lord. Well, we were college teachers for a while and then got the feeling that that wasn't quite where it was, and we participated in founding another large theater company, which still exists, Theater X in Milwaukee. And then after a period of time, the consensus there was that there wasn't as much interest in touring, among other things, as we had. And so we split off from that company just as a twosome. We've just celebrated our 18th marriage anniversary, so we have indeed been together for quite a while. And we decided to give it a try just as two. And we formed this company called The Independent Eye, and we spent 3.5 years with creating and performing material just for the two of us. And then that was a fine thing for a period of time, but then it was time that we really needed to work with other people again. And so January of this last year, we expanded again. The Independent Eye was born out of necessity. I mean, we thought we were going to form another ensemble right away, but we did indeed have to eat. I mean, we had one child and another imminently on the way. And you have to do something. I mean, people are going to have to pay you, want to see something you do. So the two-person show was a potboiler that turned out to be the main course. And we did it and didn't realize what we had walked into. And being completely dependent on each other was at that point just right. It was what we needed, precisely what we needed. So we didn't form another ensemble for a while.
I think young drama majors at universities, which you both were a while back, are supposed to like yearn for the day when they're up there by the footlights performing to the big crowds who throw roses at them afterwards,
yeah,
and all these wahoos and stuff. And you've opted for a real different course, a very personal context of performance. Were you ever in the point of yearning for the big bravo?
Well, we will get the big bravo. In fact, our production of Macbeth right now, which is very different than this other than our original material, we had a guest writer on Macbeth who's rather well known, Shakespeare, I believe. But I guess the essence of our work is that we like to do things that interest us and do them to a diversity of audiences. Because just one audience coming to the theater every night, you get very, very tired of that after a while, where you're putting out the same thing, they're giving back the same thing, and you don't learn that much in personal terms. But I think we learn a lot from our audiences, and in part because they're radically different from one time to another. A group of high school kids respond in a different way than a group of people in a regular theater or a group of doctors.
You and one of the brochures that I saw about the Independent Eye describe yourselves as being as portable as film. And I thought that was a great analogy, particularly since I've recently met a number of filmmakers who screen their films not in big movie theater contexts, but rather in small group settings, and sometimes use their films as like consciousness-raising things. Like if it's a film about a labor strike, they'll take their movie to labor groups. If it's a film about feminism, they'll take it to women's groups. And it seems that you're doing similar kinds of things with some of the pieces that you've written. What are some of the contexts that you've performed?
I think the smallest audience that we ever performed for on purpose was seven people sitting on folding chairs, and we were just absolutely knee to knee with them. We were in a small Sunday school room of a church in a small town in coastal Maryland, where the Episcopal priest was doing a series on death and dying. And a lot of our material in one way or another relates to what you're going to feel your life has been like, at any rate. And so we were that particular session of it. And we sat there in a room that couldn't have been bigger than a 9x12 rug, knee to knee with people, and just did about five or six of these pieces. And it was a very different and, in a way, very high experience. There's nowhere to hide. I mean, you're right there. You can't miss the fact that you're right there. And it goes all the way from that to performing at a great distance. We did a performance in a maximum security men's prison in Wisconsin, and we were on a stage 15 feet above the floor and 20 feet away from the first row with guards standing with their arms crossed.
They didn't trust their people.
And that, again, I'll never forget the sound of those gates opening to let the men out and closing again after we were done. The parenthesis that provided around the performance was unforgettable. We performed once during the student riots in Milwaukee, when the student movement had actually occupied the student union. We did a performance for the strikers of a Brecht play called The Measures Taken, which happened to be dealing with exactly the problems that they were wrestling with right then. And as far as we knew, the Milwaukee Tax Squad was on its way, and these people were trying to decide whether to stay and fight or split. And, wow, when you can have theater occupying a pragmatic, a practical, a real function, it gives you a very nice feeling about what you do.
Yeah. Can you do another piece for us now?
Sure.
Yeah. This is called The Entrepreneur. Oh, hello. What can I do for you?
You're vice president? You must be very smart to be a woman vice president. I mean, it's not every day that you meet a woman vice president.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, down to business now. My name's Jerry, and well, as to work, I've done a whole lot of kind of things. I drove a taxi, that's really something. I pumped gas, you know, all kinds of things where I got a whole lot of
You're looking for a loan.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. I suppose you could tell that from the way I walked in
well,
here.
Well, people about, often you know, come here for that reason.
Well, you're right. see, I thought, what am I doing? You know, what am I? You see, my dad, he was a maintenance man, you know, keeping things in good maintenance. He used to say, Jerry, yes, I'm Jerry. Jerry, look, if you want to be rich, this is a free country. It's up to you. Yeah, he was never rich because he had a family, a lot of other things to do. But he told me, he said, you want to be rich? You just make up your mind to do it. So I did.
You did what?
I want to be rich.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. That is to say, I want to get a loan and start my own business.
Oh, well, now, what is it that you had in mind to do?
A steel mill.
A steel mill?
Oh, yeah, I know. A lot of people start small, like with a McDonald's franchise or a barbershop and so on. But I thought, you know, why start small? Because you just kind of defeat yourself before you even start. So I thought, you know, how about a steel mill? Because there's always need for steel, you know. And oh, I know they talk about oil and petroleum and all that. But I thought maybe if I make it in steel, then I could do that maybe as a sideline.
Well, Mr. Jerry,
I know what you're going to say. What makes you think you could run a steel mill? Right?
Well, yes.
But that doesn't matter. Because I don't need to know. I can hire guys that already know. You know how many guys are out of work now, you know? And see, I just put an ad in the paper, and I got all I need. See, it's just a matter of somebody having the idea to do it. That's free enterprise.
Jerry, do you have any business experience?
Experience, right?
Well,
listen.
Yes?
I used to run the elevator at the Sears building.
Yes?
Well, you know, all those executives, every day, up and down. And down, and they don't even think about the elevator operator, and even don't even know you exist. You're nothing. You're like a piece of gum on the floor. So they talk to each other up and down, and I'm listening up and down. You know something? In that time, I would say that I got the equivalent of a college education.
Well, I meant more in the area of
management. Oh, I catch your drift, and I understand you have to take precautions to know that I'm not some bum off the street, right? Because if you loan me the money, it's going to pay off, right? Because you're a vice president, and that's your job.
Well, yes, it is.
Yeah, well, to level with you, frankly, I would have to say no, strictly speaking. But see, I know a surefire idea when I hear it, and I not only heard it, I thought of it. See, here's my idea. I can trust you, can't I?
Well, I'm
trust,
sure you
trust
can.
Trust you with the secret idea. Yeah. Okay. See, the key to the whole thing is you get a monopoly. If, say, you got Park Place and I got Boardwalk, it doesn't do us any good because we can't even build any houses on it, let alone hotels. But see, if I get both of them, then, wow, I mean, there's nothing you can do because you're going to land there sooner or later. Wow, that's my idea.
Yes, well...
I know what you think. See, that's one attribute of mine. I can tell what people think. You think, so what? Right?
Well.
Okay, here's a plan. See, there's all these big steel mills, right? They think they got it made. They think, I got this business tied up so tight, nobody could just come along and start a steel mill just like that. So they're not going to be watching me. They'd probably even laugh at me. They'd go, you know. So while they're sitting up there smoking those big cigars, here I am, getting set, and I'm planning, and I'm cogitating, and I'm getting ready. Like maybe I'll have my factory out in the country where nobody's even going to notice. And then, just when they think, and they let down their guard, all of a sudden, shazam! Boardwalk! Bam! Park Place! And there it is.
Jerry, I've really enjoyed talking to you,
but I
have some other work, and I think you have a lot of good ideas, but it isn't really practical. There's just no way that you could start a steel mill. You have to be a different kind of person to do things like that. Not a matter of a better person or a worse person, just a different person. Now, if it was just a matter of making up your mind, I'm sure a lot more people would have done it. I don't really make that much money, surprising as it may seem. So I'm afraid
I talked to you because I thought, you know, here she is. She's a woman. She's probably liberated. I thought, Zappo, vice president, liberated. You know, and that you'd be... No, that's okay. You know, I know. You just promise me you won't use my idea, okay?
Oh, don't worry.
Listen, hey, can you do me a favor?
I'm not sure.
Well, it's just, I got to make a very important business phone call, and I don't have a dime. Could I use your phone? It's local, and I won't monopolize the airwaves.
All right.
Yeah, okay, let's see. It's one of these funny little... Dad? It's Jerry. Dad, hey, it's Jerry, yeah? Hey, you know where I'm calling from? Vice President of the bank, right in the office. Yeah, listen, I talked to him about this deal, see, and they're not saying yes right away because money's real tight and they got to check things out. And they don't know a good deal when they say it. But, you know, but mainly, I made this really good contact. Yeah, this woman is a vice president, so you know she's got to be smart. And she asked me some very pertinent questions. So I wanted to let you know, your son's, he's... Oh, yeah, dinner on Sunday. See ya. Bye. Thanks.
Okay.
Yes.
Welcome to
Hey, now, remember, Boardwalk, Park Place, bye.
Shazam!
Linda and Conrad Bishop of the Independent Eye. You really have to have a fantastic ear for how people talk and just the kind of situations that present themselves. Where do you hang around? I mean, no, really. I mean that because I've heard a number of your pieces, and it's kind of clear to me that you've probably just observed a lot of people in a lot of different situations.
Yeah, and some things come out of reading the newspaper. And some things come about out of just suddenly dredging up, remembering somebody that crossed your path 10 years ago. Some things come from workshops. We do a lot of workshops with people. Many workshops for people who are not primarily theater people, but they may be in every which thing, from social work to prisons or any which thing. And so I suppose a lot of our observations sometimes come from things that they contribute, and then they get filtered through something that we may have.
Like Jerry in Entrepreneur, that's kind of sweet, spacey, unrealistic nature that makes you, wish that there was some way that this guy could make it, you know? Years ago, when we were first married, so, you know, at least 16, 17 years ago, we were in San Francisco when we watched an improvisational group there called the Pitchell Players. And I don't know who this guy was, and he was not a regular member of the company, but during their set of off-the-cuff improvisations afterwards, he came into an employment agency, and what he could do was to smile on coffee breaks. That was his thing, and offices are getting so gloomy nowadays. Well, there was something about him, and thinking of the ache that you felt on how this, no way was this guy going to do what he wanted to do, but wouldn't it be nice if he could?
And that just kind of put together with people that we have worked with in an unpleasantly close relationship with, where you really liked them enormously as a person, and yet no way could you depend on them or anything. It was just a very strange
thing. There was a guy when we were with Theater X who just walked in one day and kind of never left. And he liked to carpenter and tinker and take care of things and so on. And he just kind of came in and started taking care of the building and what have you. And one day he got this incredible idea that he wanted to build a shower in the basement so that we could all take a shower if we wanted to take a shower at the theater. And he did this incredible Frankenstein-looking thing down there that leaked and carried on and sat down there, and nobody would dare set foot in it except the cockroaches. But he was so sweet about it that you had to... Somebody had to go and take a shower in it just to thank him.
You know, when you're writing about types of people, it seems to me that what you'd have to do is like kind of locate them in a type, in a category, but also make them unique because no one really fits any pat description. Mm-hmm. You must get a lot of like nods of recognition and
I think that's,
when you perform.
I think that's what we try for primarily, that comedy can be a lot of things to a lot of different people. One thing it can be is pointing the finger and saying, we all, as an audience, know how bright we are. Aren't those two people stupid? And that kind of comedy gets laughs. That's not our bag. We're more interested, I guess, in the things that we have in common with other people that we have in our experience that we can share.
Linda, you have your mother used to be an actress, and she was in what, the vaudeville?
She was
circuit?
In vaudeville, yeah.
What kind of stuff did she pass on to you about what it would be like? You know, if parents usually who work kind of give their kids a sense of whether or not they should want to enter their parents' profession. What did she tell you about vaudeville and about the stage?
Well, it was obvious that she had liked it. And it was obvious that she was very good. On the circuit, she was part of the act that was one ahead of Jack Benny when they were traveling together. I mean, this dates way back. And it was obvious to me that there was something, since it was the only thing that she ever did that was really totally satisfying to her, and the one time she was fully alive, I think I absorbed a feeling that there was something special about performing that would have a power to, in effect, make somebody tune in to to a lot of circuits that other things didn't do. But she didn't tell me that. All that was by observation of what she was like when she was telling stories at parties and what she was like when she wasn't, you know. And then as far as my career ambition was concerned, I was going to be a doctor because I was one of these big brain types who was very, I had what is now called a gross lack of social skills when I was in high school. I was the kid nobody liked. Yeah. Yes, I was the kid that nobody liked and nobody dated and all that kind of thing. And, you know, she kind of, I think she was trying to console me, but she said that I was really making a good choice because I really didn't have any looks and I didn't have any heart and I didn't have any sense of humor and obviously no one would have me, and so it was good that I was going to be a doctor because that would make up for a lot of it.
That's not to say anything about doctors in the audience.
Well, no, but then I pulled a real blooper because I got involved in theater and I wound up married and a mother and a comedian and pretty and all this kind of thing. And I think in a sense I disappointed her because I did a lot of things that she, I think, would have liked to do. She left her career when she married. She thought that that was something you didn't legitimately combine. And I think when she told me that I didn't have any voice and any sense of humor, I think she was absolutely right. I don't think that's a good rap to lay on a kid to say you can't do this, but I think she had some justification at the time. So maybe a lot of what I am doing is a combination of a survival tool and a good old-fashioned thumbing my nose. I don't know. But I do know that one message that came through loud and clear was that this was something that somebody could really enjoy doing.
You must have thought a lot before you both had children of your own, knowing the amount of time that it takes to bring up a child.
Oh, well, we wanted kids right from the beginning of our marriage, and for some reason
when we didn't know any better,
it just did not happen. So it wasn't until we had left the whole teaching business. I thought I was going into academic theater and got a PhD and all that business, and then we both taught for a while. And it wasn't until we had left the relative security of that and had this crazy little shoestring theatrical operation and making very, very tiny amounts of money and working much too long hours for it that bang, bang, the kids started happening. I think probably the best things that have happened to us are things that have happened with about 5 minutes thought.
Do you take your kids with you when you're going out to the West Coast to perform or to the Midwest or something?
Right. Yeah.
Do you say to yourself, what kind of life is this for them to live, this hectic life on the road? Do you?
Oh, yeah, all the
time.
Are
you concerned with that?
We worry continuously.
It's the same kind of thing, I think, with any parent, you know, not quite knowing whether when the kid pitches a fit, whether that's just part of being 4 years old or whether he's going to be another Adolf Hitler or that kind of thing.
Well, we have to depend on both our own native good sense and listening very closely to other people giving unsolicited opinions. And one thing that I know we hear continuously that people marvel about with our kids is the fact that they are so completely open and trusting and right up front with other people, which I think is partly their own personality, but also partly habit because they've been on the road since they were born. The security that they have had is that they have had a whole lot more of mama and papa around than the average working couple's kids can do. The fact that they'll go to bed in one place at night and get carded and wake up in some place they've never seen before is not what you would call your average security. So you trade off. You give one away and you get one back. But with our particular kids, we don't have a whole lot of choice in the first place. In the second place, we monitor it continuously and worry much too much. But in the third place, we have to keep our cool and listen to what other people say and feel that we are, by and large, doing a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm. We're trying to cut down long distance touring to some degree, not only for the kids' sake but for our own sake. We were, I think, in 30 states last year, and well, this year we'll be in about that, and on the road about 27 to 30 weeks. And if we could get it down, 20 states is just as good as 30 states,
mm-hmm.
and we'd like to get it down to about 14 weeks of long distance touring, and then more around the southeastern Pennsylvania, northern Maryland.
Well, you have a piece that we're going to hear next that is a very different aspect of relating to children. And it's actually a piece about something that's been very much in the news.
When we first developed this piece, it was part of other things that are very much like what we've already done, things that are not all that heavy. But this one just came surfacing up because of not being able to forget something. Conrad had seen long, long ago on public television some interviews with women who'd had their kids taken away because of abusive behavior, and there was just something about that paradox of you couldn't deny the fact that the women really badly missed their kids, that they really loved them. You also couldn't deny the fact that for the kids' welfare, the separation was necessary. And if there's anything that is enticing in theater, it's a paradox, things that don't quite fit together. The person who's totally consistent tends to be rather dull. And this came out of that.
This is Desi.
Well, I had to throw two beds away because he soaked them real bad. Now, I know it's not a matter of the cost of the beds or anything, but we was getting older, and he was broke before. You know, I went along with him for a long time, you know, just letting him go on his own, but it just got worse and worse, and it finally hit. It hit a point, and I remember grabbing him, and I was vaguely aware of what I was doing, but I mean, to be able to stop, I had no control over it. And God, he was screaming, and I just got so terribly upset. I just took drastic measures. I tied him up at the end of the bed. Well, and then he'd move and fight and everything, and I noticed that he was starting to get these, you know, these rope burns on him, you know, from the twisting and the turning. And I said to him, David, honey, I said, listen, I don't move around so much, please, because you're going to get rope burns on you, and I don't want the burns on you. And I'd have to go out of the room to do my housework, and he'd really squirm, and it. Well, that's what left the burns on him. So, and I had to keep him inside, you know. Because I suppose he wouldn't be, well, because I wanted to heal him up, you know. I wanted to heal up these wounds that I noticed that he had on him. And do you know that he went and he snuck upstairs to those neighbors when I was trying to heal him up? Look, when I go to visit him, if I could just explain that, it's like any mother with her kid, you know. Being separated from him, that takes an awful lot out of me. And out of him, too. Yeah, I know. But look, do you know that sometimes after going to visit him, I have to go to the psychiatrist just to get back to where I can think? And if I'm going to be the one case in a million of child abuse, what they call, look, I could tell you six in this county right now that are child abuse cases, and I just don't think that they ought to have the right to step in on the one as well as not step in on the others, you know? And you have to worry about the man, too. I mean, look, we had a place to stay, but he wouldn't keep a job and support me or even try to help out, and he'd beat on the baby too sometimes, and I don't believe in that. No, I don't. I don't believe in hitting babies that young anyway, unless that. Okay, look. All you gotta do is play patty cake with your baby, and then they'll go put your name in the papers, and then everybody's gonna think that you're some kind of a monster, and it's not like that. I mean, I love babies. I always wanted babies. Yeah, I'm gonna have another one. Look, when I realized, you know, what I'd done, I cried. I must have cried for half an hour just sitting there holding him on my lap, saying his name till they took him home. I
I've tried to adjust, to become more stable so that I can get him back. I've been working, and I've been going to school, and I've done everything that they wanted me to do, and they just keep hanging right on to him, and I don't understand it. I don't know all about their laws and their rules and their regulations and what all. I want my baby back! I want my baby back, that's all! He's my baby, and I want him back!
Linda Bishop of the Independent Eye, who's in the studio with me now, along with Conrad Bishop. Well, I'm kind of speechless, really, after hearing that. Linda, watching you do that, I was just transfixed. Our audience has heard a very dramatic thing, but they didn't see the tears dripping down your face as you were doing that, which...
It's really wonderful in color television because I sort of turn purple.
You've performed that for like social agency groups.
This monologue is what a whole play started out of, and we got a very strong response to the monologue in another show, and then we developed a full play accompanied by a post-show discussion that kind of goes off the immediate emotions of the audience to go into talking about both facts about the situation like this and also positive community alternatives. And we've performed that, I think, probably about over 350 times for every conceivable kind of group, everything from military commanders and first sergeants on an Air Force base to people in a home for unwed mothers to social workers, general public, churches, just about everything.
Has a woman ever come up to you after a performance and confessed or asked you for advice and, you know, like so identified with your portrayal?
All the time, not just women, because this is as much a male problem as otherwise. We have to, when we do this play, we always follow it with a discussion. And then we also ask the sponsor, please try to arrange with wherever the space is that we are, not to run us out of there after that discussion is over, because invariably, especially when we do it at a high school, invariably there will be the person who kind of lags back while everybody else goes and then comes up and says, well, I have a friend who, or else it starts out as, my parents didn't abuse me, it isn't that, but then, and then after 5 minutes, they're telling, you know, it's a very heavy abuse thing, and they're asking, what do I do? Or somebody who says, you know, my sister-in-law, she is Desi, and I care about those kids, and I don't know, what, is there anything that I can do that's going to make a difference? Or we've had a lot of wet shoulders. We've had people who've come up who either have been abusive or have been abused, and abusing parents have almost always been abused kids, so you don't draw that sharp a line, and have just wept and hugged and say, I can't tell you what it means just to see somebody get up there in front of everybody else and do that. Just the doing of it, just the saying, people, this happens.
It's a big responsibility for you. I mean, actors usually leave their performances and maybe, you know, get autographs, you know, or ask for autographs afterwards, but, you know, I don't think that they're that frequently asked for advice
All you can do is just engage your basic human instincts. I mean, in this case, you can also you're going to be out of there the next day, and what a lot of the people need is somebody that's going to be there that can talk with them. And so you try to both put them in touch with some actual resources, and you also just respond as a human being, because I think that's one of the things most often lacking in any kind of so-called social resource.
We've been doing that particular play for over 3 years now, so we've got kind of a span, and we have heard back several years after of what's happened to some people, and it's one of the things that makes us feel really good about
somebody changed his profession. He was, I don't remember what he was in, but he went into studying and then became a counselor for disturbed kids.
And came up to us.
As a direct consequence.
Right, and said, you know what you did? You changed my life. He told us that this was a direct result.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
We've heard three pieces so far this afternoon, and the first two were kind of filled with ironies and with just, like, statements that, I mean, as I said before, I'm sure it gets lots of, like, nods of recognition, and you kind of smile to yourself, you know what it means. This third piece has just been really heavy. Can you ever do any of these pieces back-to-back? Because it's just,
Desi gets done back-to-back with
the,
comic pieces.
The stage version of what I just said. On the air, it's a tough one to follow. I remember one time that I almost blew myself away because we were trying to think, what are we in this particular case going to do? Because we couldn't do the piece we usually do afterwards. The one saving piece that we usually do after Desi is also about children, but it's very gentle and very funny, and it involves a baby doll and a lot of tossing of the doll around. And as the doll is tossed, the person who throws it is a kid playing with a toy. The person who catches it is a parent relating to a child. It's a very quick transformation kind of thing, and it kind of acknowledges that people can put a lot of stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
But we couldn't do it in this particular place, and I'm a singer-songwriter too, and one song that I wrote called Black Dog came directly out of a result of a depressive experience. Like a lot of people, I never realized how many people have problems with depression until after I wrote this song, and people kept saying, why, it's nice to have that out of the closet. And after a real bad depression, this song just kind of whammed itself into my head. I had never written lyrics before. And the song is about depression and about getting on top of it. And so we thought, well, all right, let's do that after Desi. So I finished with that piece, and as you said, here I am with my nose all stuffed up and my face all wet. And I sat down to sing this song, and I nearly blew myself away because I was already tuned in to a lot of what the song came out of. And that was, we didn't do that again. I mean, the song worked fine, but that double whammy as a performer was just almost too much to take. I think it was good for the audience, but I don't think I could do it all that much.
Well, Linda, let's listen to another song that you've written, that you brought with you, a recording of this afternoon.
Okay.
And this is called Sunshine Blues.
Right, it's Conrad's lyrics and my music.
Do you want to say a few words about the lyrics or the music before we hear it?
No.
They don't need it.
Okay, let's hear it.
Sun come out this morning, but it didn't look right. Dark, dirty shadows in the bright sunlight. I'm through the sports bay. The time clock's punching out the sunshine blues. Sit there over coffee and you add up the score. Well, you're not really lacking, but you're grabbing for more. Jesus and Moses and a dozen gurus. Well, they can't shake us out of those low-down sunshine blues. Home for some loving, pay some bills, another cup of coffee, take a few pills. Shopping for our presents, sign the dotted line. Look down payment on some new sunshine. Dancing in the bar now, cracking their gum. The bartender's pouring shots of tedium, yeah. They're all dancing, but they're dancing alone. Loan me some of your sunshine, why I used up my own. Sunshine blues, no reason to be sad, no reason to be happy, I guess I've been had. No reason to worry, no cause to look ahead. I still pay taxes, so I guess I'm not dead. We don't wanna howl, and we don't wanna sing. The dentist killed the pain, and we don't feel a thing. Sunshine blues, gonna be alone, don't ride alone. letter, don't even phone. Alone on the dance floor, nothing to lose. Well, you've just been had by the sunshine blues. We better get together and make a new song. Twos and threes together when the shadows get long. Hey, we might even make it to the 6 o'clock news with the last rendition of the sunshine blues. Gotta get together and make a new song. Twos and threes together when the shadows get long. Hey, you watch for the story on the 6 o'clock news with nobody singing the sunshine blues. Nobody singing the sunshine blues, yeah.
Sung and played by Linda Bishop, that was the Sunshine Blues, with music that she wrote and lyrics that Conrad Bishop wrote. Linda and Conrad Bishop are in the studio with me now. Their theater group, by the way, is called The Independent Eye, and they live in Pennsylvania, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. What do you do when you want, when you'd really like love to be writing more material, but nothing's come to mind? Is that a situation that's ever happened?
No,
or
the problem
is
too
much of a backlog?
The problem is usually really wanting to write and having 15 other things to do, having to write 2 press releases and do some booking calls and design a brochure and then get in the van and go to Connecticut.
What kind of van do you have? I bet you have a really great deck.
We've got a huge, it's a Dodge Maxi, and I ripped out the interior and built a platform that allows us to carry all of our theatrical material underneath and still have a lot of space for the kids. The back of it is padded with foam and is the size of a queen-sized bed so that the kids can sack out if necessary. And it is littered with awful little sharp things like Lego blocks that you step on and curse because the kid is there. 4 of us, Conrad and myself and the 2 kids, can sleep in it all at one time without difficulty. We had one horrendous night down at Stone Mountain Park near Atlanta, Georgia, where we had just come back from flying from somewhere, I don't remember where, and our 2 performing partners, Joseph and Camilla, had been camping with the van at Stone Mountain. We thought, well, we just really didn't want to go off and buy a motel. And so we tried all 6 of us spending the night in it. We it took us a long time to get unwound from that. It would be nice to have one of those great big rolling motor hotels, but then you'd feel like a dummy when you took it down to the grocery store.
Right. Can you do another piece for us?
Yeah. This is called 20 Years. Oh, hello, dear. I'm home. Sorry I'm late. Would you file that? Here it is. Here it is. Okay. My 20-year service plaque.
Oh, this?
Mm-hmm. This is a letter saying I'll receive the plaque. They didn't have the plaque ready.
A 20-year service plaque? Well, you'd think they would have had time.
Well, it was really my fault. It was my department's job personnel, so I dictated a letter for me to receive in its place. I think it reads rather well.
Would you like a drink?
No, I had one at the presentation.
Oh, did you present yourself the letter, too?
No, public relations handled that. It wishes me another happy 20. Oh, flowers.
Mm-hmm. Please, have a drink.
No, I don't need another.
Yes, you do.
Is something the matter?
Yes.
Oh, dear. Well, let's follow channels.
We can't. I'm giving notice.
Notice?
1 month notice. I want a divorce.
Oh, well, it would really be better to follow channels.
No, no channels, no process, no system, no procedures. Divorce.
But isn't this somewhat out of the ordinary?
My bags are packed.
Oh, you didn't have to. I usually do the packing.
Please don't make this hard for me. I don't want to part on bad terms.
Well, there must be some problem.
Can you imagine what?
Could I check the file?
No. Darling, for the last, I don't know how long, I've put up with it. You seem to have a need.
Well,
and the 20-year company service thing was kind of a goal.
Yeah.
But the last few years, our lives have changed.
But we talked about that. Check the minutes. We decided I would not bring company work home at night.
But you bring yourself home.
You bring
home your mind. I know you've tried to get things organized around here, and I'm not capable of organizing the alphabet, but things are out of hand.
You could always file a complaint. We reviewed them every Thursday.
All right. Now, please, try to understand. Here, I sat down and made a list of all the... Wait. No, that's it. I made a list. I don't want to make a list. I want to scream and walk out.
Dear, I understand You don't have to make a list. There. Problem solved.
Oh.
You have to remember the purpose of lists and schedules is to make things efficient. The schedule is a tool, and if it doesn't work,
well,
then...
do we have to even make a schedule to...
I know, but isn't it better that we do? Suppose I look at you and I think, oh, yes, let's do. But then I think, did I sort the garbage? Did I remember to process the cat? You know, it breaks the mood.
Dear, when this first began, you said, let's get organized.
Yes, I did.
So we did. Then you said, let's put it down on paper so we don't forget.
Yes.
So we did. And the day finally came when you sent me this.
Yes.
In receipt of your communication of the 11th, decision pending clarification of deposit status. If total deposit exceeds the sum of previous average, debit the deposit to your management fund. Please reapply on deposit form and include a projected estimate of frequency of deposit, content of deposit, and description of undeposited shortfall.
Isn't it clear?
I'd asked you to take out the trash. Darling, not everyone lives like this.
Of course not.
No.
Not everyone understands management procedures.
Oh, my God. Dear, I know you don't dock me bonus points because you enjoy it.
That is correct.
And you don't keep a potty chart on the kids because you enjoy keeping potty charts.
It is a bore.
You personally don't get satisfaction
no.
from it. And it drives me crazy.
Of course it does. That's natural.
Then why do we do it?
Now... Could we just stop fighting a minute and think? Now, let's not say a thing. Let's just collect ourselves.
All right.
I just don't
you
say...
You said stop a minute.
Oh, yes, and not jump to conclusions. We should examine all the options before we make conclusions and try to make our conclusions reflect complementary points of view.
Stop a minute.
Oh, yes. While we're doing that, could I say something?
Why not?
It has to do with the nature of who we are. We can't leave things to chance. We have an investment built up over many years, and it has dividends, and we have to protect the investment to protect the dividends. So it seemed to me that we don't want to risk basing our marriage, which is our investment, on the particular fallible personalities of the two parties involved. You and I, we have our faults, and we're equal, of course, but in some respects we're unequal, but we're equally unequal. So I just feel that it would be more stable if our relationship is grounded on proven, systematic structures that have nothing at all to do with the people involved. That way we don't really have to enter into it ourselves. We don't have to worry. We have insurance. We'll be safe.
Safe? What about my plants?
Plants?
The window plants.
I needed the space.
You needed the space.
For the files.
The files.
Yes, the files.
The files for the duplicates or the files for the triplicates? It couldn't be the files for the originals because they're in the bread box.
All right. But what would happen if we lost those files?
What would happen?
What would happen?
What?
What? I wouldn't want to find out.
Dear... I thought we could work it out, find some way to be as safe as you want us to be, but I guess I'm just too scared of being that safe. I found these.
What?
Rubber stamps. Confidential? Classified? Eyes only?
Well, say for your shopping list, suppose the neighbors saw it, put this on top, then if they see it, it's at their own risk.
Johnny's tricycle
seat. If those other kids sit there, you wouldn't know what kind of germs they have on their seats, or what about underwear, what about books, what about our procedures? Things could easily get out of hand.
Yes. Open your shirt.
Why? I will not.
I saw you.
What?
The door was open.
No.
You were stamping yourself top secret.
It's time to stabilize... our outlook.
You stabilize it. I'll leave you the reports on the children's potty dues, the children's progress files, the children's projected achievements. I'll take the children.
Sign out for them.
No, I'm embezzling
darling.
Them.
Darling.
Yes?
Darling. I can't say. I'm not upset.
Well, good.
Just remember.
I will.
That I'm here.
Yes.
And if you ever need a letter of recommendation.
Oh, goodbye.
Linda and Conrad Bishop. Well, Linda and Conrad, you are the founders of The Independent Eye, the group that you're with now that includes now three other members in addition to yourself, and you're also husband and wife. Is that an easy thing to balance, being, you know, collaborators with one another and husband and wife?
Who's balanced?
yeah, it's a process that we've had to do with over a very long period of time. I think we work pretty well together. Now we still regularly have enormous fights that come out of insignificant things. We have a lot more things. Being collaborators, we have a lot more things potential for us to fight about, apart from just the children and that sort of thing. But I think actually that it's a lot easier over in the.
A thing that took a long time, I think, was realizing that we were not mutual threats to each other's sense of value. A lot of what I have come to value has come about during the period of our marriage and our collaboration. That from the time I was 5 until I graduated from high school, I was trained as a concert pianist, so I knew I was a good musician as a performer, but I was absolutely certain I had no creativity whatever. And it wasn't until Conrad said, I will not do this production with a tape recorder. They break down. And this was when we were undergraduates. And he said, write me something. And I said, I can't. And he said, well, how do you know? You haven't tried. And I discovered that when I had a context for it, indeed, all I had to do was get out of my own way. And it just came buzzing through. And I think I've done scores for maybe 25 productions now, plus a whole bushel basket of songs. And initially, the whole music writing thing, I would feel very threatened every time you would say anything about it not being quite what he had in mind for a certain purpose. And I would get tremendously defensive, and we would have titanic struggles over it. Or when we were collaborating, say we'd be collaborating on a translation. We've done some translation work in collaboration from the German. And we'd get into huge fights because I would question the way a line went. And it took a long time to realize that that was all beside the point. And now there's still that little pang of, oh, but I like that, you know, when the other one doesn't, it vibrate to it, but it doesn't result in that kind of apoplexy.
Over the years, we have learned to get along with one another's innate senses of inferiority.
Yes.
You know, Linda, I was kind of pleased to hear, you know, that you wrote music, because having just heard you talk, I said, well, wow, she talks like most people write music or sing, because you have such a variety of inflections and such kind of like wide range of speech style. Just really reminded me of music. As I don't know much about your life, I just know a little bit. And one of the moments that I know about was a moment that was really filled with adversity. It was a period when you, Conrad, had gotten really sick with a very unusual and bizarre pancreatic ailment, which left you pretty helpless. For you both who are in theater, do moments of adversity seem to perhaps maybe hold content for pieces later on? Is there any solace in that?
Well, I think theater is a kind of language, and you can say just about anything with theater that you can say with a language. And if what you're investing your work in, if you're using that language as a means of sharing yourself with others, then you draw on the things you have. And we draw on people we meet and things we experience and the people we are. I mean, in the last piece, there are lots of elements of that poor, frightened little man in myself. That's not all of me, but that's part of me. And the same thing is true with the horrible year that you mentioned, when Linda was about to have another baby and I was about to have a big fat operation, and we had just left our other company, so we were making no money. We were down in a scuzzy basement apartment and not feeling terribly happy. Yeah, I think that's just part of what you draw on.
Okay, can you perform another of your pieces for us?